This is the Brant and Sherry Podcast.
So this is really not something that people talk about very much, at least openly, which is the problem. It's the problem. It's not out there. There's not help for a lot of people, and that is pornography. So we have help for you, and if it's not you personally struggling with this, it's somebody you know, and probably multiple people. It's not probably. It is multiple people you know. It's the way life is.
It's one of those things that people suffer in silence. Like, it's not...
Totally.
Is there such shame connected to it that just the average person seeing them, you're not going to know that that's something that they're going through, but they are, and it's tough.
And the weird thing is, having worked in Christian radio for so long, I know this is a front burner issue for most of the people listening.
Mm-hmm.
Most.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that and not talking about it, you kind of feel like you're playing church. And I know churches are that way, too. A lot of times they're not dealing with it, talking about it. And I think that's we're playing here. We're all ignoring the elephant in the room. And there are actually several elephants in the room.
We have a whole room of elephants, guys. That's an issue.
No one's paying attention. You guys aren't talking about all these elephants? We can barely get in here.
So,
but the wonderful thing about this, the back half of this podcast is with Michael Cusick, and this is a broken guy, and he has been, he would use the word humiliated because of his own, the things he's gone through in his own life, being found out, his own habits, things he's been involved in, and he has turned that to be a blessing to people. And his book is called Surfing for God, but that's the back half of this podcast, so it's extra long this time we're doing this podcast, but I highly recommend you listen to it. I don't get a cut from his book. I don't care about, it's not about money. It's about being a blessing to people. And I'm telling you, what he has to say will be a blessing to you, even if you don't struggle with it.
It's amazing. And I wasn't here when you did the interview, but listening to it for editing purposes and everything, I was just, I almost started crying. I really did.
Oh.
Because I thought, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. This is freedom for people. Because like you said, people don't talk about it all the time. So,
and you need to know too, that if you've done something that you think is disgusting or wrong or whatever, you need to have somebody come alongside you and say, yeah, got it. I'm not scandalized.
Mm-hmm.
I still love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need this to part, not to, to not be a part of our lives anymore. It's holding us down. It's breaking us, but I still love you. And Michael's tone is so good. So that's coming up again, second half of the podcast. And I hope you share it with people. And if not us, if not this podcast, then share his book, Surfing for God, with people. It's going to be a blessing. It sets people free. It's a relief. It's an act of mercy.
It's good news.
It's actually good news.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the second half of the podcast and all sorts of other stuff coming up too. She uses masking tape on
masking
her
tape.
Neck or whatever.
Whatever happens to be ailing her, them, at this
them,
at
your,
that time.
It's your family. It's your mom, your aunt, everybody.
Yes, my mom and her siblings. I guess my grandmother used to do it.
And your uncle.
Yeah.
Who has a PhD.
He does. And, he does indeed.
And he... if his elbow's sore, he'll put masking tape on it.
Yes, or duct tape. So he's being duct a little tape. More manly with it, I suppose.
Huh. And the idea is they don't offer any physical based reasons.
Mm-mm,
like
no medical based reason. It just feels better. If your ankle hurts and you put masking tape on it, there, that did it. So last night, my mom and my aunt are staying with me. Last night, I'm in the bathroom and I hear this whoosh.
Huh.
Whoosh. And so I'm like, what is that? And then when I go out into the living room, masking tape is being ripped, rip, and then here on the ankle.
Uh-huh.
So I said to my mom, what are you doing? Just getting ready for bed. So
just getting taped up?
Yeah. And taped up and ready for bed.
The only thing I can think, like, I'm a hairy person.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can think would be, it would definitely take my mind off. Like if I had a dull ache. On my leg.
Once you rip the tape off.
The duct tape would take my mind off of that dull ache. But that's a mystery. I don't know how. I was talking to your mom about it last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, again, these are highly intelligent people we're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
And I wanted her to feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want her to feel sheepish. You did. You wanted her to feel sheepish.
But you were really trying.
I was.
Thank you for that.
The only thing I was trying to say, the only thing I could come up with was, Well, there are lots of home remedies, seeming old wives' tales that ultimately are borne out by science.
Right.
We just don't know what they are yet.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I don't buy this for one second.
You didn't want to say that in front of her, but we'll do it in front of 7 million podcast people.
Oh, absolutely not. Hey, we've talked about race stuff on the podcast before. It's not that we're setting out to, this is a show about race, but just because it's the top of mind with Ferguson and stuff like that over the last several weeks. Mm. What's fascinating to me about Ferguson, among many things, is the number of opinions that people had that just happened to coincide with what they thought before the incident happened. On Facebook, people feel like they have to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Or on Twitter, I've got to have an opinion. And I'll be darned if it's not exactly what they already thought before Ferguson happened.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's just, we see an incident. Everybody sees the same incident. The same incident happened. Whatever happened, that's what happened.
Right.
And it just so happens that incident confirms everything for everybody.
Yeah. No matter what your opinion, it's like, yep, see?
Yeah.
Told ya.
Yeah. Well, I told you. I told you. Yeah. It's like it landed on heads, it landed on tails simultaneously.
Yeah.
Why not, if next time this happens for all of us, I didn't have a point of view on it because I'm like, I don't even know what happened.
Right.
I talked with Sherry about it. I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I think I retweeted somebody who said something like, wow, I just heard about this. It's hope for justice and prevails.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for that. Whatever it is, I don't know what it is.
Right.
But this said, why not take some time before you opine on it or you go off on Facebook or Twitter and not. And actually hold open the idea that there may be things that happen that don't affirm what you already thought.
Right.
And that wouldn't wipe out your whole worldview.
Right.
It just means sometimes things happen, you don't have all the facts yet.
Right.
That's all. So what if it turns out it's entirely the officer's fault?
Mm-hmm.
Entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you didn't go on the record as taking a stand. It wouldn't undermine your pro-police overarching sentiment you might have as a policeman.
Right.
Well, most of these guys don't do that. Okay. Or let's say it's entirely not the officer's fault.
Right.
Well, that doesn't mean that black people are treated equally in this country and have been, and there's never been a racist problem in this country. That doesn't undermine your overarching worldview.
Right.
But you might want to wait in any specific circumstance before you just decide that I've got it all figured out because this affirms what I already thought.
Yeah. It's okay to say I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know.
And why not? Because we don't have all the answers.
Right.
And it turns out there's things that happened, didn't happen on both sides where it's like, oh, I didn't know that. Nobody said anything about that.
And we're not going to know. I will say this. Someone did, what would be the word? I don't want to say rebuke. That's probably too harsh. But I said something about just, you know, black on black crime or something I said. And they said, you know, Sherry, seriously, sister. And that's when you know the rebuke is coming when you're, do you really think Jesus would be out there protesting and looting and doing all I mean, WWJD, do you really think Jesus taking a TV from Best Buy? Huh. I don't think so. But good question, brother. But what I did say was, no, I don't think he'd be looting. Do I think he'd be hand in hand, arm in arm with the protesters? Yes. Do I think he would be sitting on the couch of the police officer telling him all's not lost and you're not condemned? Yes. So if I can't see myself the way Jesus would, because he's not beholden to MSNBC, Fox News,
right.
Republican, Democrat. Right. He's about good news. That's what I'm supposed to be about.
Right.
So if that's where he would be, then that's where I need to be. Now, that's difficult because I'm African American. I've seen things. I've heard things.
Right.
So I would go on record as saying my inclination would naturally go with the boy. That's just me. But Jesus would be on the couch of the officer. So I have to be there too, Brand.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to.
Right.
And if I can't, then I need a heart change.
And I have to. As somebody who's, I'm just bent towards law enforcement.
Right, right.
So I'm always like, I think they get a raw deal. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. They're, you know, doing the best they can. My interactions with the police have been positive.
Right.
Which, you know, well, not entirely. Now all these things are going back in my mind.
We'll talk about that on
Yeah, I was actually, yeah. I got some stories about that. In our small town, we only had like two cops.
Okay. But
man, they tailgated me all over the place.
Really?
All over. I would turn for 15 minutes all over town. They'd tailgate me just waiting for me to make a mistake and then get me. And I don't know what I did.
Well, I could say, we're probably going down a rabbit trail here, but I could say anytime I've been with you in the airport or anything, you're always targeted.
Yeah, I've got that look of he's scheming something. He's doing something. True. What is it? Anyway, I tend to be pro police. So if I hear a story, it's not, I don't view it through a racial lens.
Right.
Because of my background. Mm-hmm. And yet, I can't look at a story and just go, well, the cop's in the right on this.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Why would I draw that conclusion within 10 seconds of seeing a story or within knowing what I know about how the media works within days even? True. Like, bottom line, Jesus is with him.
Yep.
Jesus is with these people. Mm-hmm. He understands what it's like to be subjugated. He understands what it's like to be the victim of racism. Mm-hmm. He understands what it's like to be in an occupied territory where he doesn't get justice.
Yeah.
He understands what it's like to be executed by the authorities. Mm-hmm. He gets it.
Right.
And he understands what it's like to be falsely accused.
Right.
He understands. So all of that stuff, I totally agree with you. I just think, take a breath, have the strength of will or the strength of mind or the strength of spirit, whatever it is, to not feel like everything has to be affirmational of what you already think. We live in a broken world. Not everything fits our pre-existing narrative, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't destroy the narrative. It just shows how broken our world is. That's it. We're podcasting here from my patio using our equipment, mostly purchased at Walgreens. I have a little thing. I just posted on our Facebook page, hey, comment under this if you want us to do a segment about you.
Right.
And so we just randomly picked somebody, and I picked Josh Morgan.
Okay.
And so we just went to his Facebook profile and thought we would do a whole segment about him.
All right. This is a Josh Morgan.
Yeah. It's all about Josh Morgan. He is a student, of theology and philosophy at Eastern Nazarene College. He lives in Quincy, Massachusetts. He's from Augusta, Maine. And he's awesome.
Wow.
I'm looking at his stuff. Well, he's a Patriots fan. And that is a little bit tough to take.
That's an issue. No offense, Josh.
No, but it's not. And we don't blame you. He's from Massachusetts. But that is a hard team. Like, if you're not from Massachusetts, it's hard to root for you guys.
Yeah. I find it very difficult as a Steelers fan.
Yeah. He's a fan of...
We're supposed to be celebrating Josh here.
Oh, he's also a fan of Need for Speed, Temple Run, Angry Birds, that sort of stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. And he enjoys, obviously, theology and philosophy, which is cool. We could have him on the show and argue about stuff.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, because the world needs one more podcast arguing about theology.
There's not enough of them.
If we just get our theology straight...
Then everyone would be okay.
Everything's okay.
Right.
And his cover photo is him with a bunch of kids. I don't know who these guys are, but it looks like Josh is in a leadership role with some younger youth.
Nice.
And that's pretty cool. So, Josh, you are awesome. German flag, don't understand that. don't get that.
It goes with the Patriots thing, maybe.
Yeah, Darth Vader, that goes with the Patriots thing. I see your pictures. Thanks, Josh. You're awesome. Josh Morgan. It's called a joke factory, and the idea is this. If we crowdsource humor, we should be able to come up with something really hilarious, because there's wisdom in the crowd.
Crowdsourcing humor.
That's been shown to be mathematically true, that the crowds, for whatever reason, are able to produce economically viable choices in all sorts of things. They study this.
Mm-hmm.
So all that said, here's the challenge. I want to give you some material, and then you make a joke out of it. And hit me with your ideas on my Facebook page. It's just Brant Hansen page on Facebook. Brant Hansen page. And then just write it on the wall if you can come up with a joke. But it's got to be fresh. And so to control the freshness, like I don't want a recycle joke.
Mm-hmm.
Two random things you have to work into your joke. And I picked here just like off the top of my head.
Okay.
Fantasy football and baby squirrels.
Those two things together in a...
Yeah,
joke.
So can you come up with a joke? And maybe your joke isn't awesome, but maybe combined with somebody else's joke.
That's where the crowd comes in.
Yeah.
So you may have the setup, someone else has the punchline.
Right, so you can look on Facebook, see if anybody else has posted something. That may spark something. I don't have any ideas right now.
You don't?
No, but I can think of some.
Okay.
I bet you can too.
Those are two kind of difficult things.
But think like, why did the baby squirrels sign up for fantasy football league? And then whatever the answer is the funny thing.
Okay, why?
I don't know, but I mean, that's the funny.
All right, there's the setup, guys.
There's the humor.
Insert humor right there.
Why? Okay, two baby squirrels were doing their fantasy football draft.
Uh-huh.
And one says to the other, hey, why did you take Marshawn Lynch first? Uh-huh. And the second one says something that's really funny.
Okay, again, there's your setup, everybody, right?
But I'm basically handing it to you on a silver platter.
We're not going to do all the work for you guys. That's what we're trying to say here. You have to pitch in.
Okay. maybe it's not a white. Maybe it's, hey, there's these guys and they're playing fantasy football. And this one guy says, I want Adrian Peterson. And the next guy says, I'm drafting baby squirrels. Why? Why did he do that? Well, and then the humor.
Again, there. Insert Bam. Humor right there.
So anyway, just go to Brant Hansen page on Facebook. And then I'll take the best one and we'll give you a prize.
Oh, and it'll we be have cool. prizes yep. now?
I'm going to get some prizes and we will have them. And we will mail them.
Okay.
And so that's Brant Hansen page on Facebook. Baby squirrels, fantasy football. Do your best. We'll see what happens.
It's going to be very
I've already basically given
yeah,
it to you.
Yeah, you've handed it. Very, very viable choices yep. there for people to come up with.
So it's all in your hands. Michael John Cusick is the author of Surfing for God. And let's just dive into this. This is so important. But Michael, talk about your own background a little bit. Tell us what happened for people who don't realize.
Definitely. I was sexually abused as a four-year-old, and all through elementary school, I continued to be abused by an uncle and other family members, exposed to and used in pornography in the 1960s and early 1970s. Mm-hmm. Became a Christian at age 16, and my life changed dramatically, and I thought, wow, great, this is going to be out of my life now. And the problem got worse, precisely because I thought, now I'm these two people. I'm this dirty, perverted, bad guy on the inside, and I'm this nice Christian guy on the outside who's now learned this new language. I knew I was saved. It was a real, sincere relationship with God. But my double life grew, and until the age of 29, it remained hidden for the most part, until one day in July of 1994, when married 3 years, I came home from work, and I got caught in a pack of lies, and my wife found out about not only porn, but massage parlors, strip clubs, prostitutes, adultery, alcohol abuse. And that was the worst day of my life and the best day of my life, Brant. Hmm. It was the worst day of my life because I was exposed and I was humiliated. But it was also the day where I discovered that I was really loved. I've been a believer in Jesus for 14 years, and I was, quote, saved, but I don't think I ever really knew the love of God or the love of Jesus until that day. The other reason it was the worst day of my life was because I had to watch my wife, you know, basically I hit her with a Mack truck that day, and there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. I've led a pretty charmed life, at least on the surface and on the outside, and that was one of the first times in my life when I was helpless to fix the situation. I couldn't come out of the manure smelling like a rose. Mm-hmm. And yet it was out of that that I realized what I think every one of us needs to learn, and that is, when we're at a place of absolute powerlessness and weakness, that there is one who lives inside of us, if we're a follower of Jesus, who is powerful and who out of our weakness brings strength, and who out of our shame brings glory, and out of our pain he brings redemption. I mean, this stuff is really true. I want to just offer hope to people that are listening today that we can sometimes be around Christianity and God talk so often that it kind of feels like standing in front of the greeting card section at the grocery store, wherever you buy cards, where there's just all these nice thoughts that are encouraging. But the bottom line is, and there are people listening right now who they're hurting, they're struggling, they're addicted, and they know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is that when you have lost everything, that's when God loves to show up.
Mm-hmm. You know what you said, which I thought was so great? I said, even if you're not looking at pornography, for instance, it doesn't mean you don't have a problem with it. Essentially, like, you can build circumstances around your life that keep you from doing that, but your heart may not be fixed.
Exactly.
So talk to me about that, because when we're talking about this, this is just the tip of the iceberg thing, and as you've mentioned before, but what's really going on with us?
Well, it's interesting that I started to hear feedback from people through the Amazon reviews and people that would email me after Surfing for God came out. Mm-hmm. And they would say, I've never struggled with porn or even sexual lust, but I'm obese, or I have a spending problem, or I'm a gambler, or I'm just a jerk. to my kids at times, and I'm really, really angry. And one person in particular really went into depth about how they filled in the blank for sex with food. And so I really think that when we're talking about the deeper root issues for lust, which biblically simply means strong desire, it's when we misdirect or misplace our strong desires that from a Christian perspective, the object of our lusts turns into an idol. And then whatever we give our hearts to that is an idol, our heart attaches to it. And that's really important for people to understand, because we are created for attachment. We were created to connect. And even God himself is relational and connected and attached to one another in the person, in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and with the Trinity. And so pornography is yet again a counterfeit, not just a counterfeit of something sexual, but a counterfeit of actually the way that God is connected and the way that we're meant to connect and attach to one another in a way that would reflect that. So anybody can read Surfing for God and go, huh, that's kind of speaking to the issues that that I've struggled with, whether it's sexual or not.
Well, it's really difficult in the moment when somebody's attracted to pornography or whatever to be thinking, this is really about me and God. I mean, it feels like a purely physical thing. Lust feels like a purely physical thing to a guy in the moment. So how can it possibly manifest itself as a physical urge when really it's a spiritual thing?
Well, that's a great question, and I can respond to it on a number of levels. The first thing I would say is one of my favorite quotes is from Thomas Aquinas, and I'm sure that in our last interview I talked about this, but Aquinas said that beneath every sinful behavior is a legitimate God-given appetite. So something as simple as a guy that feels horny and he wants to look at porn, or he wants to act out, he wants to be physical with his girlfriend, beneath that, what feels like a physical sexual desire might be a longing or a desire for comfort, for intimacy, for a sense of, in a negative case, it might be a sense of taking out his anger. A lot of times when a guy has a girlfriend, or when I was married to my wife and I was engaged in certain behaviors, that was a passive-aggressive way of acting out anger. So sometimes the physical is, I'm really, really angry. And that's one of the first steps for men to go beyond the sin management model of, I'm just going to try to rein in my desires, is to ask the question, what is beneath this physical desire? So on a non-sexual level, I have a really bad habit of, I leave the house in the morning and I might eat a couple power bars or something like that, and I will go until 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I don't eat. And then my blood sugar just drops. And I've been tested for hypoglycemia and they say, no, you don't have it. But the bottom line is that my physical hunger around 3 or 4 in the afternoon, after I've been able to suppress it all day with caffeine, my blood sugar is saying, we need food. And I could say, okay, what is this hunger about? It's about the fact that I don't take care of myself very well. It's about the fact that I'm not attentive to what my body needs. So sometimes, working backwards, physical desire can be a sign of, you know what, I'm not taking care of myself very well. I'm hungry, and so it's easier to act out. I'm angry, it's easier to look at porn. I'm lonely, so I can masturbate. Or I'm tired, and this is a way to go to sleep. So usually when I talk with men, all I have to do, or all other people who come at it from this perspective of a depth heart perspective, all we have to do is really scratch the surface, and then you're into people's desires.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Like when you sit down and you counsel somebody, because you counsel people, do you have them journal or something? Like I mean, I don't even know if that's a useful tool to figure out. People do that with food, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I oftentimes will have people journal, and sometimes people come to me and that's something they're already doing. Sometimes I'll make them begin that habit, and it's just a great way to develop self-awareness. And, you know, it's virtually impossible to grow spiritually beyond just I'm saved without some level of self-awareness. And so this is not just for people who are struggling with porn, it's just a great practice in general.
It seems like there are guys that I look at and respect and that have a lot of stuff going on in their lives, and their self-esteem seems to be okay because of it. And then there are guys I see, their self-esteem issues are obvious. And sure enough, if there's any sort of discussion, they're dealing with pornography. That seems like a vicious circle.
Yeah, it is a vicious circle. One of the questions that I address in the book, but I almost every conversation I have with a man for the first time, at some point I'll ask him, where do you feel the most alive as a man? Where do you feel the strongest in your masculine heart? And 9 times out of 10, people will say, well, ministry, or when I'm doing my favorite hobby or sport or something like that. Video games are a big one. I actually, you know, feel the most manly when I'm doing that. And in 20 years of counseling, I've never heard anybody say, I feel the most alive as a man in the presence of my wife, my fiance, my girlfriend.
Huh.
And so it's interesting that you note that there's certain guys that their self-esteem issues or their identity might be lower, that creates a vicious cycle. It can also work on the opposite, that for a guy who's really, really successful and might look really confident on the outside and like he's got everything all together, but he's struggling with lust and porn and sexuality, because what he can do is compensate for the emptiness inside of him. Mm-hmm. And that sets a person up for an even greater struggle. Sometimes those are the people where it's a lot harder to experience healing and freedom.
What do you tell like a young man? I had a guy come up to me after a Sunday school class I was teaching, and I think he was 12, and he was in tears about what he'd seen on the internet. And he said, I wish I could unsee this. He was so broken. And he also said that he keeps going back to it. So here he is already struggling with something like that. When somebody's that young, what would you say if you had a chance to talk to that kid in that moment?
That's a great question. I think I'd want to say several things. And, you know, in this scenario, the guy is 12, a real life situation, but depending on which survey you look at, the average age of first exposure is between 9 and 11 years old. Mm. And it's no longer what I saw was a naked lady on a centerfold in a Playboy behind 7-Eleven at the dumpster, but what people are seeing for their first exposure is very, very graphic, oftentimes violent, shocking kinds of images. And I think the first thing I'd tell him is, man, just thank you so much. It's so important that you shared that. I'd want to tell him that he's got a good heart, and that whatever he thinks or feels about himself as a result of that, that you know, we would call that shame. A 12-year-old, I might not introduce that concept, but I'd tell him that he's got a good heart, and the fact that he feels yucky about this is something that belies the fact that he's got a good heart. I think it's really important in all of our conversations, Brant, to take this, and this is going to sound strange for some of the Christian listeners, the resurrection life and the fact that our sinful nature has been crucified, we're not meant to engage primarily in a mortal battle. We're not meant to turn off the faucet of sin. We're meant to open up the faucet of living water inside of us. And what happens is we keep cranking down that faucet going, I've got to turn this off. That's the idea that Bonhoeffer talked about, that the pursuit of purity is not about suppressing lust, but about reorienting our life to a larger goal. And one of the ways that I take it out of the moral context is you're talking with this young man, and after you say, man, you've got a good heart, is you go, well, you know, porn is a drug, don't you? And he'd probably go, what? Porn is a drug? I mean, I know what crystal meth is and crack cocaine, and I've even heard nicotine and caffeine are drugs, but come on, porn isn't a drug. That's something you look at. And yet, psychology and neuroscience have proven that behavioral addictions, they have just as big an impact on your brain as ingesting a substance, and porn in particular on the internet, because when a person sees something that's so incongruent with what they're used to seeing, when they see something shocking or disgusting or something that's really disturbing, the brain literally is overstimulated and too much dopamine is released. And when too much dopamine is released, it short circuits. And what it does is it shuts down the part of the brain, the frontal cortex, that would otherwise go, this is not a good idea to look at. And in this case, I mean, this guy didn't do anything wrong because he was exposed to it. But to know that it's a drug takes away this battle of I'm bad, I'm shameful, I'm not morally strong enough to overcome this. Because what that sets up is this false path of what purity and holiness look like are how well I perform on not sinning. Mm-hmm. And that actually sets up a whole life of having to not trust God's grace and live out of our new hearts that Christ has made, but it sets up a whole way of, I now have to perform, I have a checklist that make me a good Christian. And that's one of my tremendous concerns with our approach to lust and porn. Many of the attempts to fight this actually make the problem worse, which is tragic.
And why do they make the problem worse again? I know you used the water example, but beyond the analogy, why does it make it worse to take a moral papering over approach to this problem?
Well, let me be clear. I think that morality is important,
right,
and it is important to resist temptation,
sure,
and to say no to sin, but that should never be our primary modus operandi for behavioral change. And if you think about taking a beach ball and holding it underwater at a pool or at a lake, what's going to happen? The longer you hold that beach ball, the more effort and the more energy you have to put into holding it under, and eventually you're going to have to turn away and respond to somebody who's telling you to put on more suntan lotion or something, mm-hmm, and it's going to pop up with greater and greater ferocity. So Paul made it very clear in Romans that the law arouses our sinful nature.
Mm-hmm.
We know from psychology that if I tell you not to think about a purple elephant, that you're very likely going to think about a purple elephant. And so rather than have an approach where our energy goes into not doing something, we're actually called to move toward something. And the best analogy I've ever heard on this is related to a friend who has a pit bull. And one of my close friends' sons who has an infant. And the pit bull got a hold of the infant's little doll that's with them in the crib. And, you know, the parents and the grandparents just went crazy. And they tried as hard as they could to rip open the jaw of the pit bull to get this little stuffed animal. The harder they tried to open the dog's mouth, the more it clamped down. In the meantime, the grandmother opens up the refrigerator, gets a piece of hot dog,
right,
and goes, here, Rosie. And the dog drops the doll,
right,
and goes and eats the hot dog.
Right.
Well, that's actually a great model of the Christian life and how we're to deal with any addiction, is uh-huh, that we're trying to wrestle porn out of the jaws of our sinful nature, or some might say out of Satan's powers to tempt us, when in fact we need to turn our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, and his beauty, and his love, and his invitation to all you who are weary, you know, come unto me and I will give you rest. That's actually what brings freedom. And we don't do a very good job in the church of talking about what it means to go toward that which nourishes us, that which actually satisfies our soul. We're telling people to try harder to rip it out of the jaws.
I've talked to people about this, and I, of course, something I've tried to do in my radio or writing or whatever is just try to help people to actually love God, like actually love him. And it's weird how that's almost a foreign concept where people will say, yeah, I know, of course I love God, like in an intellectual sense, but when you actually do crave for him, you do tend to drop stuff, and it's not even because you're trying so hard to drop it. It just kind of, a lot of times it happens.
Yeah, all true Christ-centered spirituality has to do with a combination of intention, where we set in our heart like a compass, uh-huh, I want to set my heart toward true north, and then spontaneity, that we all know the bumper sticker SHIT happens.
Right.
Well, there's a bumper sticker I want to make that says change happens, holiness happens, freedom happens. And again and again and again, I see that when men and women give up trying really hard to stop a certain behavior, and they set their goal on becoming a different kind of person, a person, uh-huh, that loves God, all kinds of amazing things happen. You know, I don't want to sound solicitous, but I was reading your blog last week, and I tweeted a quote from you, and it's along this idea. Someone wrote in asking a question about sexuality, and basically asked the question, will I go to hell? And your response was gracious and tender and beautiful and so true theologically. You said the real question is not, will you go to hell if you do this sin? The real question is, do you want the kingdom of heaven? And that's what we need to do, is point people toward this beautiful kingdom where we're called to live a certain way, where we don't have to stop sinning in order to get God's love and approval, but we can just rest in that. We can, uh-huh, fall back into that. And it sounds heretical, it sounds dangerous, but I tell people all the time, stop trying so hard to overcome your addiction.
Oh my goodness, exactly.
Just trust God. You know, one of the best definitions of humility is not, I'm so low and I'm so terrible, uh-huh, that you know, I just can barely believe that God saved me. But humility is actually trusting God and one other person with who we are. So what would it communicate to God, a tremendous humility, if you and I said, God, here's our junk today that we're dealing with, and we both have it, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to simply trust you with it. So speak to me, teach me to rest in your presence, show me your love, and maybe tomorrow this will be gone, or maybe tomorrow you'll show me what I need to do. I might need to go to counseling or read a book or confess this to a friend, but I'm going to trust you today that I'm okay and that you love me just as I am. So the struggle with porn and lust and sexuality is a tremendous opportunity to preach the gospel to ourselves.
No kidding. I found myself, too, increasingly when I'm having conversations with people, and I'm not coming at it from a place of, I'm done with all of these issues, but it's just, like, we'll talk about that thing that they're struggling with is pornography most of the time, but then we'll move off it pretty quickly. And get into what God has planned for this person, how they can serve people, the different gifts that they have, like trying to build up somebody and encourage them towards other things. Like, don't let this stop you from being what you could be, what God really wants you to be. That's actually pretty exciting.
I love it.
Yeah, it jives with what you're saying. And I want people, if they're listening to this and they were listening for the magic elixir or for more guilt. Because sometimes in Christianity, if you're raised in Christianity, you feel like if somebody makes you feel guilty, then they did a good job. Like, I'm really convicted after what he said. Well, great. But that's not necessarily what's actually going to free you from having to deal with this.
Exactly.
But if someone's listening and they're like, I wanted the magic elixir, this is not a magic elixir. This is really what you're dealing with, though.
Absolutely.
And so we
all have this belief that if and when I can get over my struggle with X, Y, or Z, then God and I can be tight.
Uh-huh.
Then he and I are going to be best buds. And the fact of the matter is, he says, no, trust me with what it is that you want to get out of your life. And instead of that being a barrier to knowing me and to be intimate with me and for me to use you and have you be fruitful, it's actually a bridge. The very thing that we think keeps us from God will deepen us into our relationship with God when we go, here, I'm going to trust you with this. And it's absolutely amazing. It's the idea that out of crucifixion, God brings resurrection. And we all want to get out of the crucifixion. But my buddy said, we worked together at an inner city rescue mission years ago, back in the early 90s. And he said, and these were guys we were working with that were, you know, putting needles in their arms every day and uh-huh. just really wasted men. And he said, every one of these guys, and you and I, Michael, we all want resurrection without crucifixion. And there's just no way to it. There's no shortcut.
I know there's people that are listening, too, that just would like to hear personally. It's almost like Michael Cusick could have a full-time ministry just with getting on the phone and say, I know you struggle with this. Guess what? I'm not scandalized. God still loves you. There are better days ahead. I imagine every single guy would be in tears just to hear your voice say that, honestly. I mean, I think you deal with that all the time. Just somebody who's not scandalized, like, there it is, it's out. You still love me?
Yeah. It's unbelievable, Brant. Yesterday was my 50th birthday, and you know, it sounds corny, but all day long on my iPhone, I got notifications. You know, another person texted me. Another person said happy birthday on Facebook. And it was 20 years ago in July, and I go around the world and I speak about my story and stuff, and I just scratch my head and I go, God, why is it that you have honored me and exalted me to this place of offering people hope when I was such a screw up and I was so broken? And he kind of goes, well, you're not special. That's what I do with everybody. Whenever anybody is willing to give me right. the gift of who they really are. And we are a gift when we give ourselves to God, no matter how messed up we are. We really are a gift to him. He exalts us. And that's going to look different for different people, but it's right there in Luke chapter 14. Everyone who exalts himself will be humbled,
right.
but he who humbles himself. In other words, the definition we used earlier, everyone who trusts God with who they really are, you will be exalted. And, you know, I would say to that man, it is going to be okay. You are going to be okay. He who began a good work in you long ago, he's completing that work. My ministry, restoringthesoul.com, is taken from Psalm 23:3. And that verse says that he restores my soul and guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. So God's cosmic plan is that He actually has decided long, long ago to get glory out of all of our failure and brokenness, where he needs to restore us, and that he's actually guiding us and ahead of us mm-hmm. in that process. He's 100 or one step ahead of us, but he's ahead of us and guiding us. So I would say to that man, it's going to be so okay. And your struggle doesn't define you. This is not who you really are.
That is Michael John Cusick. The book is called Surfing for God. Highly recommend it. Thank you again to him. And if you want more information from him too, it's surfinforgodbook.com.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Follow Brant on Twitter @BrantHanson and on the web @BrantHanson.com.